From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch, friends. My name is Joseph Backholm, and I am sitting in for Tony Perkins today, who is off saving the world, no doubt. Want to remind you of some ways that you can stay in touch with us and with Tony. You can find Tony on Gab at Tony underscore Perkins. You can get all the FRC updates texted directly to you by texting the word STAND to 67742. That's STAND to 67742. And you can download the Stand Firm app, which will give you access to every Washington Watch program on the App Store and at Google Play. Today, we are going to talk more about election integrity. Yesterday on the program, we covered a lot of what was going on in Georgia, what is going on in Georgia. And there's also similar debates happening in the state of Arizona, and we're going to talk about that today. We're also going to go to Alabama and talk about their Born Alive bill, some progress being made in the state of Alabama on that. And then we are going to end today's show with a conversation that Tony had on yesterday evening's Pray, Vote, Stand broadcast with Indiana Senator Todd Young about the filibuster. Why does it matter, and why should it be a point of prayer for all of us who care about order, democracy, and protecting ourselves and our children from the worst that the left would offer us? So that conversation is going to happen at the end of the program. But first, to start off today's program, we are going to talk infrastructure, infrastructure, infrastructure. Now, it's not as boring as that sounds, I assure you. You probably know that there's much discussion in Washington, D.C. right now about a $2.25 trillion, but who's counting, infrastructure plan. President Biden is inviting Republicans and others to meet with him to discuss this infrastructure proposal, and claims that he is wide open on discussing how to pay for it. If raising the corporate tax rate, he wants to know if raising the corporate tax rate to 28% is acceptable. He thinks it is. That's what he's proposing, and he knows other people disagree. So he's soliciting suggestions. As you may recall, he issued a similar invitation to Republicans to discuss the $1.9 trillion COVID relief plan before Democrats pushed that through without any GOP support. Are we going to see more or less the same with this proposal? Well, with me now to discuss this is U.S. Congressman Brian Babin, who is a member of the Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Absolutely. Great to be with you, Joseph. And just another bloated Democrat bill. We're getting the same old song and dance from the Biden, how he wants to unify America, and yet Pelosi and Schumer will ram this through on reconciliation. We'll have zero input from the Republican side. And that's what it has by all appearances.
Well, let's start at the beginning of this conversation. Much of it has to do with what is infrastructure. Now, you sit on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. How do you define what infrastructure is, and how much of this bill falls within that definition?
Well, I can tell you, I was looking at Senator Gillibrand's her tweet that says, yes, paid leave is infrastructure, child care is infrastructure, caregiving is infrastructure. And I can tell you, it's none of those are infrastructure. I can just say this, that we absolutely, it would be hard for me to give you an exact description, because I've heard, plumbing, constructions, things of this nature. But infrastructure in my book is exactly what it says: roads, bridges, waterways, canals, airports, airstrips, trucking, all of these that let us be able to move our goods and services back and forth across this great nation. That is exactly what it is. I've served on the Infrastructure and Transportation Committee. Now I'm in my fourth term. And I can tell you that child care, we've never had a child care paid leave or caregiving hearing in any of our hearings in 7 years of being on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee.
Well, what do you make of the effort to try to make paid leave now an infrastructure effort?
Well, this is just more of the same that we've seen before, Joseph. You know, we got this $2 trillion COVID relief bill. They give great names to these bills. A Made in America tax plan is this one's, that's what it's supposed to be. And these names mean absolutely nothing. The relief bill for COVID had a 9% of that was maybe COVID relief related, and 91% was payoffs for Democrat cronies. I can tell you that we probably have more that you could classify as infrastructure than 9% in this. But by any conservative, or I should say liberal, generous accounting, this bill will probably have less than half that could be, you know, figured and construed as having infrastructure in it. $111 billion for drinking water, $328 billion for upgrading military health facilities and other federal buildings. It just doesn't make sense. This is a union payoff with SIU. We see these people just paying their cronies off. That's what it is, just exactly like the last bill. And quite frankly, Joseph, this will be spent like drunk sailors. We still have trillions of dollars up there that hasn't been spent before. And I am all in favor and strongly support updated infrastructure. I was working with the Trump administration on infrastructure bills before. We've gotten some great infrastructure bills through, and bipartisanly, I might add, in the last Congress and the Congress before that. But this is a fluffy title that is absolutely going to put people out of work, drive our jobs overseas, and add to an already $28 trillion national debt. I have 17 grandchildren, Joseph, and I worry very much about the assault on their bank accounts and solvency and security of this nation in the future.
I agree with that. It's a silly number when we start talking about $27 trillion, and this is, you know, $2.25 trillion. You know, I remember I used to try to stretch my imagination and imagine what billions were. We now seem to be using the T word so frequently. But Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo had something to say about how other people are responding to this. And this is clip 3. We're going to play this, and then I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
The president put his plan out a week ago. Let's give it a shot. Let's go big. Every single business leader I've talked to applauds the fact that this package is more than just roads, bridges, and water.
So what do you make of the idea that every business leader in America is excited about the what this is trying to do?
I'd say that's a little bit of stretching the truth and exaggeration and hyperbole, in technicolor. I can tell you there's a lot. I was a small businessman myself. I have tons and tons of constituents who run small businesses, and I can tell you they're very apprehensive about the all-out assault by the left on everything that we hold dear in this country, including our bank accounts. These people are killing our jobs, our prosperity. They want open borders. We've got, you know, thousands and thousands. We've already had 19,000 unaccompanied children come across our border, right. And they passed bills like the Equality Act, H.R. 1, and creating more victim groups. The cancel culture, I can tell you there's a lot of apprehension on the part of most Americans that work for a living and are very, very concerned about this. And I can tell you a lot of them are Democrats as well.
I think that's true. I think concerns are becoming bipartisan. The question is, can we pass something in a bipartisan way? Now, you talked a moment ago about the fact that President Trump was also trying to get infrastructure through, and he had his own issues with Congress. Now President Biden, in clip 2, Bobby, get this ready, he says he wants to work with both sides on this. I want to play what he had to say about negotiating with Republicans on this and then give you a chance to respond.
Democrats and Republicans will have ideas about what they like and what they don't like about our plan. That's a good thing. That's the American way. That's the way democracy works. Debate is welcome. Compromise is inevitable. Changes are certain. In the next few weeks, the Vice President and I will be meeting with Republicans and Democrats to hear from everyone. And we'll be listening. will be open to good ideas and good faith negotiations.
Congressman Babin, do you think that President Biden is open to good faith ideas? And what ideas do you think the Republicans might be proposing?
Well, we've got a lot of proposals. I mean, we've been talking infrastructure for 4 years now since Donald Trump was inaugurated. Everyone, I think, on both sides of the aisle will agree that America's infrastructure is in sad shape. It really is. However, you cannot just put lipstick on a pig and call it a beautiful woman. You just can't do that. And infrastructure means infrastructure. And as we talked about in the very first part of our conversation here, we tried to negotiate. In fact, I can tell you that President Trump did his best to negotiate with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer in last Congress, and Pelosi wound up walking out of the meeting. So they can say one thing, but I think you need to go by their actions rather than their words. So far, since Biden has taken office, I've seen no evidence whatsoever of bipartisanship. And I serve on two great, usually bipartisan committees, not only the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, but also on Science, Space, and Technology. We've passed some good things bipartisanly over the years, but I don't see this infrastructure bill that they're talking about now being this Made in America tax plan or doing anything but driving our jobs overseas and bankrupting America and paying off their cronies, the Democrat cronies.
What do you see as the biggest differences between what Biden is proposing now and what President Trump had proposed that he was unable to get Nancy Pelosi to agree on?
Well, I think you're seeing a good example is that there's going to be, I can't remember the exact figure, but it was about between $400 and $500 million for unions, which would wind up enabling them, one provision of it would enable them to charge union dues to people who are not members of their union. And I live in a right-to-work state. If they're successful in ramming this thing through, it's going to drive up the cost of construction and projects at the federal level all across this country, and your taxes will go up. There will be a lot less efficiency there, whereas with President Trump, he kept talking about public-private partnerships. And I think this is a great – I'll give you an example. I represent the Port of Houston and the Houston Ship Channel. And we've got a public-private partnership. We got this through on a deal just at the end of President Trump's loss. And this is going forth, and it's going to work. It's going to be a good project to widen and deepen the Houston Ship Channel.
Congressman Brian Babin, we thank you for your time. You can hear the music there. We are out of time, but greatly appreciate you joining us today on Washington Watch.
You bet, Joseph. Thank you so much. God bless.
And it is important, the point that he made there, that in addition, this Biden plan proposes an additional $35 billion that would be paid by the oil and gas industry after the changes that it would make. That would be passed on in energy costs. Stay out. After the break, we are going to talk about what's going on in Arizona on election reform. Stay with us.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In our time, North Korea remains one of the world's most mysterious countries. Unfortunately, what we do know about North Korea indicates the country is also one of the world's worst abusers of human rights, including violations of religious freedom. The North Korean regime has engaged in an intense crackdown on religion for decades. Today, few religious believers remain, and those who do face grave danger. The secretive nature of the regime, nicknamed the Hermit Kingdom, makes it difficult for American leaders to address these human rights issues. Yet, even though options are limited, the gravity of the situation calls on Western countries to take every action possible to relieve the suffering of the North Korean people, a people who have no chance of speaking up for themselves. To learn more about this important issue, check out FRC's publication titled North Korea, the World's Foremost Violator of Religious Freedom. To access the information you need to stay informed, including a list of policy proposals, go to frc.org/North Korea.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. My name is Joseph Backholm, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Georgia has been on the minds of many the past several days, especially with corporations like Major League Baseball, Coca-Cola, and Delta Airlines going to great lengths to punish lawmakers there, or at least attempt to punish lawmakers for their efforts to reform election laws. But Georgia is one of at least 24 states that have been moving measures through their legislatures to reform election laws. We may soon be seeing more attention turning to states like Texas and Arizona, where these bills are actively moving. So before the left starts churning out false narratives on those states, let's hear what's going on. With me now to talk about the election integrity efforts in Arizona is State Representative Shauna Bollock, who also co-chairs an elections integrity process working group for the American Legislative Exchange Council. Representative Bollock, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Joseph, for having me on. I was reelected back in November to restore the integrity of our elections, and that's what I have been doing along with my fellow Republicans here in Arizona and across the country. You know, for at least the next 2 years, I know that's one of our top issues that we're focused on as a caucus. Just to put something into perspective for you and your audience, just between November 6th and the beginning of January, my office received over 57,000 emails just focused on election integrity and the outcome of the November election. So people might think, oh, that's not a lot, but it actually really is for a state like Arizona. And it's just me and my assistant who goes through each and every one of those emails. And, you know, the only reason we know how many emails came in is because we had a local left-wing news outlet that didn't believe me that I said it was over 30,000 emails that came in. And, you know, we had to do a public record request to find out it was over 57,000. Right. And I assume, you know, legislators in other states are dealing with the same thing.
Yeah, that is a huge number. And I think you're right that there was a lot of people who have heartburn about what we just experienced last year. Now, tell me what specific issue are your constituents concerned about? What issues are you concerned about? What happened in Arizona that you think needs to be addressed?
Well, there was obviously money coming in. I live in Maricopa County and I represent Maricopa County. And there was over $2 million that came in from, the Zuckerberg Initiative. In my district alone, I live in a swing district and represent a swing district, which is about 33% across the board, Democrat, Republican, Independent. So it's a pretty purple district. The folks that are writing in, especially even now, so things have obviously kept changing because we have an audit that's supposed to be taking here in Arizona in Maricopa County. But looking at some of our election integrity bills, you know, we're trying to make it easier to cast a legal vote and harder to cheat. And I know my fellow legislators in other states are doing the same thing because I've actually talked with them since the November election. You know, you hear the left wing news outlets, big tech coming in and saying that we're trying to suppress votes. But at the end of the day, I think what they're trying to do, I believe you probably will agree with me, I think they're just trying to figure out a way to pass H.R. 1 at the federal level. So I don't know when you first read H.R. 1, but I read it back in January 2019. I was not even sworn in my first term. And I'm like, I can't believe the Democrats have this master plan to federalize our state elections in any place in this country. You know, I thought, you know, the U.S. Constitution and our freedoms guaranteed under the Bill of Rights were going to go right out the window after I read that. I was thankful that President Trump was still there, but obviously we don't have President Trump anymore. But I believe it's inherent for states to maintain its control over our elections. And so there was a poll done here just about H.R. 1 back at the end of February, and it's not being well received. I'll just let you know, only 32% of the Arizona voters were even aware of what it was, right? A lot of people are just finding out what it is. In the statistics that were actually shared with us, 89% support requiring signature verification for any mail-in ballot voting, and 76% disapprove of accepting and counting mail-in ballots that were received after the election deadline. So most of the election voters are kind of looking at those things because we know what's in H.R. 1. You know, basically, they don't want us to clean up the voter rolls. They want to allow for ballot harvesting. They want to send a mail-in ballot to everybody. They want to allow for same-day voting registration. And in Arizona, our election bills actually speak to a lot of the things that H.R. 1 outlines, as well as, you know, my counterparts in other states.
Yeah, I think this is an important point that you make, because a primary purpose of H.R. 1 is to tell state legislators like you that you no longer have a say in how your state conducts elections. And regardless of, you know, whether you're left or right, just the disenfranchisement of all of the elected officials at local and state levels around the country should be concerning. We don't want to have centralized government that makes it impossible to make local decisions. But Representative Bollock, tell us a little bit, what are the proposed changes that you think would be the most helpful to address the problems that you've had in Arizona?
Well, I can tell you some of the bills that we have introduced and where they're in the process that address it. The governor has already signed one requiring the Secretary of State to compare death records with statewide voter registration database. Why we didn't already have a bill like that, I have no idea.
Yes.
But he did sign that one into law already. And we have a bill that he signed prohibiting an early ballot envelope from revealing the voter's political party affiliation, because that was actually being done. You can actually see which ballots were being mailed. The postmaster could see if it was a Democrat, Republican, or independent voter.
Yes.
And another one that he just signed was dealing with campaign finance reports. In my own district alone, we had about, I think, $800,000 come in from out of state spent on behalf of the Democratic Socialist that won. There's two House seats in my district, and the other person, she was basically put into office by all that money from out of state. So that that law actually addresses that issue. We had a resolution opposing H.R. 1. As you may know, in Arizona, we have barely enough people to actually pass a bill. So it takes 31 out of 60 to pass it, and that's how many Republicans we have in the House. So if we have one member off, then we're totally screwed and can't do anything. So we actually have kind of issues that are bubbling up, just like Georgia and Texas have.
Sure.
A lot of, you know, corporate America trying to say what computers should not be doing.
Real quickly, because you can hear the music, we've got about 30 seconds. How is what's going on in Georgia affecting Arizona? Are you guys going to be, are they being deterred? Or are they going to push through?
I believe if we can get the vote out of the House and the Senate and onto the governor's desk, I believe that we'll be in good shape. I apologize, my dog just walked into the room. There's a bill that cleans up the voter rolls.
Yep.
If the voter fails to vote in the primary and general elections, that's the bill that corporate Arizonans are basically pushing back against right now.
Representative Shauna Bollock, thank you for your time. We do have to let you go. We are out of time. Stay with us on the other side of the break. We're going to go to Alabama and talk about their Born Alive bill. Some good news there. We'll talk about it next.
The history of religious persecution in China is extensive, and many are not aware of the current oppression of religious groups taking place there. China restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale. This religious persecution targets those of every faith. Christians, Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong practitioners are all victims of the Chinese Communist Party's efforts to suppress any set beliefs that might compete with the party's ideology. This campaign against religion has had and continues to have devastating consequences for those who simply wish to live according to their conscience. Family Research Council's recently updated publication addresses China's consistent abuses of human rights and explains why they cannot be treated like any other country. Learn more about this issue by visiting frc.org/China.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Welcome back to Washington Watch. My name is Joseph Backholm, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. The Alabama House of Representatives approved by a 76-12 vote last week a bill that will require a physician to exercise reasonable care to preserve the life of a child who is born alive after an abortion or attempted abortion. With me now to talk about the bill is its sponsor, Alabama State Representative Ginny Shaver. Representative Shaver, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
Well, we are glad to have you, and just do thank you first for your courage in taking up this issue and leading, which can be a difficult position on so many of these issues. But tell us, to start, why is it that you felt compelled to sponsor this legislation?
Well, having fought for pro-life legislation since the late 80s and early 90s, back when the Alabama state legislature was controlled by Democrats, which is now changed, and we do have some pro-life legislation. I was also a crisis pregnancy counselor and did post-abortion counseling, and found out that there are, thankfully rare, but it still happens, occasions when a baby can be born alive as a result of an attempted abortion. And so back then I said, you know, and having no clue if I ever, if that were me, if I were the legislature, this would be the first bill that I would introduce. And here I am. This is my first session in the quadrennium, and it was my first bill. And so it's still relevant today.
Well, it is relevant, and bless you for following through on your commitment in doing so. You know, we heard this is relevant because in recent years, we heard both in New York and in the state of Virginia, where essentially Governor Northam there basically said, well, if a child survives an abortion, we'll keep it comfortable, and then we'll decide what happens to it afterwards. What has been the response in the legislature? Now, we know it passed the House overwhelmingly, but what's been the response since you introduced this and began moving it through the process?
Once people realize what the bill is not, that it does not in any way attempt to regulate abortion or restrict abortion, because in Alabama we've already done that. Mm-hmm. In 2019, we passed a total ban on abortion, except for the serious a health risk of the unborn child's mother. And of course it's in the courts, and we don't know how long that's going to take. before it's heard, and we hope to overturn Roe versus Wade with that. But in the meantime, we're still operating, you know, under the abortion law that we had. And so once they realize that it's not about abortion, we're talking about a child outside the womb. I've had some bipartisan support for that. And as you pointed out, the vote was overwhelming.
Yeah, and it really, in some senses, it's so sad that you even have to make this point, because the idea that a child who was just born, whether somebody tried to kill it or not, it is now alive, it is laying on a table. The idea that someone wouldn't come to its aid or shouldn't come to its aid should be offensive to us. And I think this draws a line that I think that's really important. Now, you named this bill after a woman, Gianna Jessen. Why did you name this bill after her?
Well, I thought it was important to give a name and a face and an actual person and attach that to the bill, because people want to say that this does not happen, and it does. I mean, there's an abortion survivors network that has, I think, roughly 300 members of people who this was their birth story, and they know it, and they do not mind being public about it. But Gianna does have an Alabama connection. She came to Alabama when she was just 14 years old and testified before the legislature and health committees when we were trying to get pro-life legislation passed then. And she's been to Alabama many times to speak to pro-life groups, and she's living proof that this does happen and the baby is alive and can survive. And so that's why I named it after Gianna.
And for those who may not be familiar with Gianna, her first name is G-I-A-N-N-A, and you can look her up on YouTube or Google, and you can find her, Gianna Jessen. She speaks on this issue because she is herself a survivor of an attempted abortion, and she still bears the scars of that, and she was permanently damaged, but her soul was not permanently damaged, and she is a real light in this world, and she carries this message joyfully and effectively about why this issue matters, not only the Born Alive bill, but all life matters, and why abortion is just such a terrible thing. Now, Representative, what do you expect to happen? We passed the House. What do you see as the future of this bill in the Alabama legislature?
Well, I'm hopeful that it'll pass the Senate and be signed into law this year. I've spoke before the Senate Health Committee yesterday, and it was given a unanimous favorable report yesterday. So now we await to go to the Senate floor. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that it will pass the Senate floor and they signed by the governor.
Now, we do have listeners in Alabama. You can hear we don't have much time, but what would you encourage people in Alabama to do to help make sure this becomes law?
To call their state senator and encourage them to support the Born Alive bill.
Well, and we hope you will. Representative Ginny Shaver, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch, and thank you for your courage on this issue. Bless you.
Thank you, Joseph.
Now, coming up, we are going to turn our attention back to what's going on at the federal level, and we are going to talk about the filibuster again. We're going to replay an interview, a conversation that Tony had with a senator from Indiana, Senator Todd Young. They're going to talk about the filibuster, why it matters, what you can do about it, why you need to pray. We're going to have that conversation coming up after the break, so don't go away.
Get a trusted perspective on the news of the day every day. Listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins to get honest and in-depth commentary on what's going on in our nation's capital and around the world. Join Family Research Council President Tony Perkins live every weekday on over 800 radio stations across the country. Or listen to the show when it works for you by visiting TonyPerkins.com. On the show, you'll hear from guests like Ben Carson, Senator Josh Hawley, Representative Vicki Hartzler, Molly Hemingway, Pastor Jack Hibbs, Dana Lash, Sissy Graham Lynch, Pastor John MacArthur, Eric Metaxas, Albert Moeller, and more. Tony is joined by leading political figures, pastors, and policy and culture experts who will inspire you to be engaged and informed on the important issues facing America. For a Christian perspective on the news of the day, tune in to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins at TonyPerkins.com.
Ever since the Supreme Court handed down its infamous Roe v. Wade decision in 1973 that legalized abortion nationwide, a national debate has raged over whether the government should fund abortion. In 1976, Congress banned taxpayer funding of abortion and Medicaid by passing the Hyde Amendment. Several states have followed suit, passing their own restrictions on abortion funding. However, because government funding is a complex system of joint federal and state programs, completely banning taxpayer funding for abortions and abortion businesses like Planned Parenthood is challenging. There is still much work to be done to free the American taxpayer from funding the horrific practice of abortion. Family Research Council's new publication clearly explains the Hyde Amendment and why we need to keep it in order to save taxpayers from being forced to fund abortion. Access this important information by visiting frc.org/hyde.
What's on your daily or weekly reading list? Are you looking for honest and informative commentary from fellow believers on the current issues facing our culture? Family Research Council has just the thing. Check out FRC's blog at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts as well as outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Read up on some of our latest titles like Four Disturbing Trends in Religious Freedom Worldwide, Legitimizing Looting Jeopardizes Liberty for All, The Media Still Doesn't Get It, Conservatives Tend to Vote Conservative, and more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you live out your faith and to stand for truth. Our blog is here to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Joseph back home sitting in for Tony Perkins. And a reminder that you can get all of FRC's updates texted directly to you by texting the word STAND to 67742. That way you won't be cut out of the loop if anybody gets deplatformed. And also download the Stand Firm app at the App Store and at Google Play so you can get every Washington Watch program on your phone at your convenience. As many of you know, for the past 8 months now, we've been broadcasting a weekly video series to encourage, equip, and mobilize Christians into prayer and action. And you can find these past broadcasts at prayvotestand.org. Now, last night, the topic of the broadcast was the Senate filibuster and how Democrats want to blow up the system entirely so that a simple majority rule instead of so that a simple majority can rule instead of working to find middle ground. The reason they want to do this is so that they can make the Senate an express lane for wildly unpopular legislation that would not otherwise pass under the current rules. Things like the Green New Deal, the Equality Act, Medicare for All, H.R. 1, a permanent Roe versus Wade, amnesty and open borders, minimum wage, a law nationwide, taxes, tuition-free college, many of the left's dream list. This also includes major structural changes like abolishing the Electoral College and D.C. statehood, which would, of course, change the balance of how elections are determined in their favor very dramatically. And that is why this is such a serious issue and one that we felt needed to be addressed last night. So right now, we're going to play for you the discussion that Tony had with Indiana Senator Todd Young. Here's what they talked about last night on Pray, Vote, Stand.
Let me start with the most basic question. We're going to go back to civics, but I think it's important for our conversation. That is, what is the Senate filibuster when it comes to legislation and why is it important?
Well, in short, the Senate filibuster is that mechanism which protects minority rights, protects those United States senators who want to ensure that our country does not fall victim to fleeting and intemperate majorities. That happens through simple democracies, simple majorities, which occur in the House of Representatives. Therefore, a rule has been put in place for generations which requires a supermajority of United States senators to end debate on any given issue in the United States Senate. Right now, one United States senator could indeed have himself or herself heard on an issue about which they care deeply and have a deep conviction. That could all end. That generations-old precedent could end. That 60-vote threshold to end debate and then bring a piece of legislation to the floor of the United States Senate, subject to a simple majority vote, could be eliminated through a simple majority vote of the Democrats. That is what Chuck Schumer and so many liberals are pushing for in today's America. And that is precisely why I'm before you today, so that we can speak out against that and prevent all the far left fallout that we know will occur should the Democrats elect to eliminate the filibuster.
And just so folks know, from a historical perspective, up until the 1970s, that threshold was, I think, 75 votes. That were 70 or 75 votes, so it was even higher. It was lowered to the present 60. But it's always been the Senate chamber that is kind of the stabilizing force for our government. So things, as you pointed out, can't change on a whim. You have to build consensus, and you have to show that you have, you know, a clear ruling majority that agrees with an idea. If not, it's kind of like what we see with increasingly with each change of White House administrations. For instance, take one example, the Mexico City policy. You get a Democrat, they do away with it. You get a Republican, they put it in place. And when you start doing that on everything, our allies are going to have a hard time building long-lasting relationships with the United States.
Well, that's exactly right, Tony. So when I think of the filibuster and its importance, it's not just isolated to discrete policy issues, though it is that. When we think about the importance of life, when we think about the importance of protecting our right to keep and bear arms, all of our fundamental liberties and freedoms. But it's more broadly about the importance of forging compromise. It's a forcing mechanism that incentivizes members of the United States Senate to work with people who have a different perspective as it relates to some of our most important issues. It also leads to comity, that is civility, between members of the United States Senate. We don't see enough civility in today's day and age. Perhaps if we'd spend a little more time listening to one another and trying to empathize with one another's opinion, we could make more forward progress without fundamentally changing the structure of the United States Senate. And of course, as I indicated, it leads to compromise. Compromise is not always bad. One can engage in principled compromise on all manner of different issues. In fact, that's what the American people want from their legislators. They want us to stand firm on issues on which there is no compromise possible. But they also want us to identify common ground where it can be found. The filibuster and the 60-vote threshold facilitate that sort of governance.
You know, Senator Young, that's an extremely important point that you bring up, because what would move the Senate from a leadership body of doing what is in the best interest of the nation to a reactive body that can be tossed to and fro based upon the latest political winds or whatever agenda the media chooses to drive?
You think about our founding fathers, and they most certainly intended the United States Senate to be an assembly of grown-ups, an assembly of statesmen, and in the modern day, of course, stateswomen, who would not make their decisions quickly, who would deliberate before they acted impulsively and impetuously and thoughtlessly. And in the words of James Madison, who would refine and enlarge the views of the electorate. That is, we are not supposed to just follow the mob. We're not supposed to just follow whatever 50% plus one of the electorate believes on any given issue in order to elevate ourselves through these elected positions that we are blessed and honored to have. Instead, we're supposed to take into account all the various perspectives of our constituents and then advance the common good. That, after all, is the purpose of a republic, our form of government. in the United States Senate, in the filibuster plays a really important role in that filling out that mission in the modern day.
Senator, I want to get you to speak for a moment to the issue of the hypocrisy we see coming from some on the other side of the aisle. Senator Cory Booker before said we shouldn't be doing anything to mess with the filibuster. But now he is saying the filibuster has to be reformed. Senator Ed Markley said before, when Democrats ruled return to the majority, we'll still restore the 60-vote margin. Now he's saying the filibuster was created so that slave owners could hold power over government. You know, is the filibuster racist? I mean, the Democrats used the filibuster 327 times in 2020, but now it's a Jim Crow relic. How do they say that with a straight face?
Tony, I won't speak to specific colleagues' comments, but let me just say I cannot reconcile the irreconcilable. I know there are some incredibly principled United States senators who I pray, and I encourage others to pray. Remain strong during these important hours. Kyrsten Sinema, she and I disagree on all manner of different policy issues. She happens to be a Democrat from the state of Arizona. She has indicated recently that she is, at least for the time being, prepared to hold strong and maintain the filibuster. Joe Manchin, for a period of time, seemed to be holding strong on this issue. It's unclear to me where he's going to end up. I would just encourage everyone to pray that they remain strong, to encourage them in this journey, because they are indeed experiencing some pressure from the far left. But frankly, that's not an excuse. When we raise our right hand to uphold the Constitution of the United States and defend this land against all enemies, foreign and domestic, there is a responsibility that comes with that. And that responsibility from time to time involves doing unpopular things, saying unpopular things, speaking truth to power, the power of one's own constituency sometimes. And it means maintaining our constitutional order. So the filibuster must be maintained. Otherwise, all the ill effects of its own elimination, as you have itemized, and frankly, as Mitch McConnell has warned the other side, will indeed happen. There's no question. It's a certainty.
Senator Todd Young, I want to thank you for taking time out to join us tonight. But one final question for you. You mentioned praying. We're going to pray. But what else can our viewers and listeners be doing at this critical juncture?
You know, I think as they pray, each of our constituents can lift up our children, lift up the next generation. This is so much bigger. We forget in this immediate moment than those who cast votes. We speak, all of us of voting age, all of us adults, we speak for the generations yet unborn. We speak for our children and our grandchildren. And we also have a solemn obligation, because we're a partnership across generations. We have a solemn obligation to maintain the integrity of this republic for those generations past who have passed it on to us. It is our bequest from them. And so we can pray. About that solemn obligation and remind ourselves and our children of it as well. So thank you so much, Tony, for this opportunity. I'm really appreciative.
Senator, before you go, can I just pray for you and your colleagues?
Yes, indeed.
All right, folks, join me in praying for Senator Young and others like him that are standing up and speaking out. And sometimes they're taking a lot of arrows from those who disagree with him, but just pray that they would continue to have a platform to speak and that their voices with great clarity would go forth and people would understand what's at stake. So join me as we pray. Father, I thank you for Todd. I thank you, Lord, for his stand. I thank you for where you've placed him and others like him who are speaking out on this. And I pray, Lord, that they would have the platform that they need to be able to speak with clarity to this issue. It's sometimes lost in the weeds as kind of a technical issue, but it's not. It is speaking to how we're going to be governed and what types of policies will make their way through our Congress, through the Senate. And so, Lord, I pray for strength for them. I pray they would not grow weary in this, what I would say is a spiritual battle. Yes, it's playing out in the political realm, but it's spiritual at its heart. So we pray a blessing upon Senator Young tonight and for his family and for his colleagues and those that stand with him. And Lord, we do pray for the children, that Lord, we would do our part to preserve this great republic, moving it back to you, toward you and your truth, that other generations might enjoy the fruit of freedom. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
What you've just heard was Tony's discussion with Senator Todd Young from last night's Pray Vote Stand broadcast. I encourage you to check out the entire broadcast at prayvotestand.org. You can also hear the conversation that Tony had with Pastor Jim Garlow, who is a shining light from the pulpit from Skyline Church in San Diego. And I hope that conversation helped you understand a bit of the gravity of this situation. It's you know, on one level, the whole nation, and we're coming to prayer literally around a parliamentary rule in the United States Senate that, if we're being honest, probably 98% of Americans or more can't tell you what it actually is. But the significance of it can hardly be overstated. And you heard them talk about what really is at stake. We're talking about the Equality Act, which is one of the greatest threats to religious freedom that America has ever seen. We're talking about H.R. 1, which is the election reform bill that we talked earlier in the program about, that would essentially disempower every state elected official and tell every state, you no longer have discretion in how you conduct your elections, that Washington, D.C. is going to tell every state how they have to do it, and the rules that Washington, D.C. would impose on every state would essentially, and of course this is the reason why they're doing it, make it very likely that Democrats could do things that they should not do in the name of winning elections. And then we talked about things like packing the Supreme Court, which would then become a possibility if all you need is 50 votes, because if the left is able to pack the Supreme Court, the conservative majority, which we currently think at least is favorable to religious freedom and is inclined to beat back some of the worst things that the left would attempt to do, they could dilute that influence on the Supreme Court and give themselves a majority and then essentially have a monopoly of the entire government, all by doing away with the filibuster. You also heard them mention Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin from West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, who are likely the keys to whether the filibuster survives to see another presidential administration or not. You should be praying for them, because they probably are. They are going to face the pressure, much like the first couple of years of the Obama administration during Obamacare. They didn't know if they had enough votes, but eventually they found them because they tightened some screws. They got some things done. That's just how it works. So, folks, be in prayer. Never be afraid, but always be in prayer, because God is in charge, but we all have something to do. And thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. We will see you tomorrow.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.